Broadcasting from KUCR Studios in UC Riverside, this is the Highlander Newsroom. I'm your host, Crystal Mims, joined today by...
Aaron Gretsch, news editor.
Robert Lees, assistant features editor.
Joseph Avila, assistant news editor.
Welcome to the newsroom, the people behind the paper. Thank you for joining us today. We're going to be talking about the UC private prison divestment, as well as Oregon, and we're also going to be talking about Bill Cosby and David Bowie and some entertainment things today. So yeah, we'll get started actually with Bill Cosby, who has had a lot of allegations brought against him by several women. They say that they were raped by him and that he drugged them as well. Some of these cases go way back, during, I guess, the prime of his career and also later and things like that. So I just wanted to talk to you guys about what you guys think about the allegations and how the media has handled all of this and things like that.
Actually, I take back what I said, right before the show. I actually did like some of the things that you pointed out. Like, your research was really well. You did a really good job on that. Like, I didn't know his, allegations stemmed back to, 1960.
1965.
Aaron is referencing Robert's article about Bill Cosby that's in the paper this week.
Yeah, sorry about that. That's not, really shameless, self-promotion. That's just, me just,
Well, you're shaming. You're promoting me, so it can't be self.
Okay. Yeah. But other than that, I think the point that you just kind of drove across, there were, other people that you mentioned that have, allegations on them, but I guess the reason why Bill Cosby was just, such a shock for, a lot of us was because he was always, don't do drugs, be respectful and, be loyal to your wife and all this, and you find out that, he's drugging and raping people and also taking drugs and stuff, so he's, you kind of find out that he was just, this huge, massive hypocrite that, yeah. Was considered America's father at one point, and even if those charges are dropped, it's gonna forever take his legacy.
I think LA County has said the statute of limitations has run out on one of the charges he was arraigned on. It stands to see what'll happen, but basically where he is now with the allegations is the number of women who've accused him is now over 50. So even if half of them are lying to get on national television. I'm not saying that's what any of them are doing, but even then, that's still a staggering number, Richard Ramirez number. And where he is now is he basically said, I didn't rape these women. Sure, we did drugs together and I had sex with them, but it was totally consensual. So the point is the big thing I noticed because for my article that Aaron mentioned, I watched 6.5 hours of The Cosby Show. I watched Bill Cosby talks to kids about drugs. I watched some Little Bills and Fat Albert. I watched a bunch of this stuff, and everything he does is he's just paints himself as this wholesome, a funnier Mr. Rogers. And then it turns out he was lying. And I guess think that the biggest thing is people put celebrities on a pedestal, and they stand to reason that maybe they're public persona is different than their actual persona. Talking about Woody Allen, he's not that nervous in real life. Or maybe Kanye West is really nice and volunteers at a homeless shelter.
Yeah, I mean, but the point is I mean, Woody Allen, that's different too, because Woody Allen wasn't really considered America's dad. Suffice to say that any charges that were brought against him in the past,
He
was Woody Allen. At the end of the day, it's surprising, but it's not too surprising to so many people. It's oh my god! And then what's even worse is the fact that we kind of expect people just because they produce great work to get away with that. It's we have a real big problem not separating the artist from the art. And Walt Disney, I guess, can be considered an example of that. He had a bunch of sketchy allegations against him and stuff, just the way that he ran Disney and everything was really weird, but that doesn't take away from the fact that Snow White was a great movie.
You have to consider if someone does something and they have an attitude that's morally reprehensible, is it fair to patronize their work? For instance, I will never pay to see a Sean Penn movie because I don't want to patronize, I don't want to pay for a future defense team or another lawyer or contribute to that. So sometimes the art and the artist kind of relate. What do you two think?
Yeah, I think it was really interesting watching people react to it, only because a lot of people that I know and like people in my family were just like, these women just want money, and you know, he's so old, they need to just leave him alone. And I think it really just showed how like rape culture is really, I don't know, prevalent in our society, because like no one even wants to listen to what they had to say. It's been over 50 women who have come forward. Not all of them are lying, and who's to say any of them are lying? And it's just like really disappointing to hear people like completely write, you know, these women off because of who he is. And it's really sad, but like at the same time, it's worse for these women. I mean,
yeah.
I see what
I think that what it also speaks to, like more broadly, is just Hollywood in general, or just people in power. There's a lot of things that they can do and get away with. And I know Hollywood in specifically like is a big cultural producer for the United States and for the world, but a lot of people that are in Hollywood that are really powerful, they've gotten away with a lot of really bad things. Like, I don't mean to like take spotlight away from Cosby, because what he's done is just inexcusable, but like there are a lot of other people in Hollywood that have done similar things that are in the news. I know someone named Dr. Luke. He is a big producer for pop stars. But there was actually a case against him by Kesha, the pop star, for she alleged.
Oh, right.
He raped
I heard
her.
About that.
Yeah, that he like did a lot of things to her. Like I guess the charge would be like he like kidnapped her or whatever, and he like would just exert this like crazy control over her life and her career, and he would tear her down a lot. And like, you know, the fact that this guy is still making hits for people, for pop stars, is crazy. Like, it just shows like what kind of culture is bred in Hollywood. And then I guess it just speaks to like what kind of culture then we take on from Hollywood, I guess. So that's my two cents.
I've always kind of been of the belief that if you have enough money, justice doesn't apply to you. And I think, unlike a lot of the things, we could talk about examples for like till the cows come home and get depressed, but I just think it's very sad.
If you want to know more about that, there's like a documentary I could recommend called An Open Secret.
Like, An Open Secret.
It's like basically about like six like young child, like, well, they're adults now, but they were like child star actors that were boys that were sexually assaulted by producers. And one of them is actually a really famous Hollywood director too. Like, that is that. So if you want to look into that.
How about Ron Howard?
What?
Ron Howard?
No.
Okay. Because that's the only director, child star actor I know of.
Okay.
Oh, no, he wasn't a child star. He's like a famous Hollywood director that was accused of like abusing.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's hard for people who are really interested and love these people, and they see them do something like this, that, and they're like, no way, you know? And people get really attached to like entertainers and the people, because, you know, whether they make music or movies, you know, music, anything can have like a really like a big impact on your life. And so, like, I don't know. I feel like people just are in denial. And
yeah, the people know. That I just, to wrap up my last point, that I feel the most for is there's like statistics that say a lot of sexual crimes go underreported or unreported. And so if someone was a victim of sexual assault, what are they going to think when they see that 50 people have accused the same person and there's been no legal action taken against them?
Right.
Is that going to inspire them to seek their own justice, or is it going to make them think that, oh, no one's going to believe me?
I
think that's dangerous to the fabric of all of society.
I kind
of
think it's crazy that there's even a statute of limitation on rape. Like,
right,
just because
you
did it like 30 years ago, like, or like however long the statute of limitation is, it's like, does it take away from the fact that like this person was like affected by it? Like, this person, it still doesn't take away from the fact that it happened. Like, if a murder were to occur 30 years ago, like, that person will be charged for a crime. If someone robbed a bank 30 years ago and they find the money and they find out who was behind it, like, those people are going to jail. Like,
yeah, and a lot of rape victims, they take a lot of time to come forward because they're traumatized and, like, they just can't deal with it. So I don't think there should be anything saying, oh, well, you're just too late. Like, you know, that's really awful. But, yeah. Also, on the entertainment side of things, sad entertainment side of things, David Bowie recently passed away Sunday. How did you guys take the news?
I'll just give my two cents, because I don't have much to contribute to the conversation. But Aaron texted me when he found out, I guess. And I'm not a big fan of Bowie. I don't listen to his music or anything. But I still, living in the culture, understand his, like, how far-reaching his influence was. So it was pretty sad, even though I didn't know really I would have any connection to a certain song, or like I the images that were produced and just like the way that people have talked about him over the years. He's not someone that's just, you know, he's a heavyweight. He's a legend in music, and yeah.
Yeah, I'd say I'm probably like in the same boat. I definitely knew who he was. I've heard some of his music, but I wasn't like the biggest fan or anything, but I definitely know that he was like a game changer, and his style and everything influenced a lot of what we have going on today. And so like it was, I don't know, it was sad to hear. And he recently came out with an album too and everything, but I didn't know that he was battling cancer.
Very proud yeah. person.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys have started following me for over a year on social media, so you know how big of a fan I was for a while. I mean, I've made memes about David Bowie. I've made, you know, obviously a lot of references about him, about his songs, about his lyrics. I mean, I even posted links to lists about his greatest albums, which are a lot. There's like over 30, and they rank them. But it was just, yeah, really sad, because I mean, he's one of those that like that progressively since childhood I've listened to since I was 6 years old, just remembering that song I saw off a Shrek, which was Changes. But that was the first David Bowie song I remember listening to songs such as Let's Dance and Modern Love when my mom was cleaning the house and everything else. He's the reason why I like so many different artists. Without David Bowie, there would be no Madonna. There would be no Kanye. He taught people it was okay to be you.
Yeah. I'm sad that he died. It happens to everyone. The only thing is, I don't think it's really going to have a huge impact on anything besides people listening to David Bowie a lot more. I've been listening to him more because...
Yeah, I heard his album like shot to number one on iTunes
but
and everything.
He wasn't exactly relevant to the world of music anymore. He's a former rock star. He still releases music, but I remember that like 2 weeks ago when I found out he was releasing a new album, I thought, oh, like who is this album for? And I have to say, he's a wonderful musician. He's obviously one of my favorites. I mean, a lot of his songs are great. I've pretty much been playing. I have his whole discography on my phone on shuffle constantly for the last, you know, 2 days. But I wouldn't say he's exactly relevant. He's not someone cut down in his prime as more as he is an aging rock star that is.
I would heavily disagree with that, actually. Even if these artists don't realize it, David Bowie in the flesh may be dead, but his legacy will live on forever throughout artists, and he just completely reshaped popular music.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is we're not going to be missing out on any new music. David Bowie is no longer a creator. He is very influential, and his influence is going to go long past his death, just like it has with like several bands, like the Beatles and stuff. The only thing is, music didn't lose any new great content because David Bowie died. If anything, like there might be a tribute album to him, so he might actually, by dying, create more content, like the really awesome Freddie Mercury concert that happened after he died. But he honestly wasn't doing anything really relevant. The last thing I remember him doing that was like David Bowie's impact on music was, I think it was a Trent Reznor song, like I'm Afraid of Americans, and he did guest vocals on that. But honestly, it's not like we're going to be missing out on any new music. It's not like when Amy Winehouse died or when John Bonham died. Those people were still creating music. David Bowie was, but no one really cared.
I think like one thing that'll definitely happen is people who didn't really have any idea who he was, or maybe just weren't familiar yet, will now listen to him. Yeah. And like I said before, his album kind of like shot up on iTunes, and that kind of always happens when like a celebrity or someone like that dies. You get people who maybe weren't familiar but are like, oh no, and like, you know, people just start paying more attention. So it's always, I don't know, interesting to watch that. But yeah, I think it was sad to hear about him passing away. But
so sorry for his daughter, she's only 16.
Yeah, that's gonna be really tough, like on his family and everything. But
good wishes to his family.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Highlander Newsroom, broadcasting on KUCR 88.3 FM, streaming online at KUCR.org, on the KUCR app from the App Store, or the TuneIn app on Android. All right, so now we're going to head on over to prison divestment. the University of California has sold approximately $25 million worth of investment stocks from private prison corporations. This decision was made on December 1st after UC administrators met with students from ABC, that's the African Black Coalition, that's an also an advocacy group, and they campaigned against these investments throughout 2015, and so now the UC has divested. I just want to ask you guys what you thought about all of this, their motivations behind the divestment, things like that.
I think their reasoning saying, like, we don't believe this is a good long-term venture is a lie, because, I mean, like, private prisons make a lot of money. The only thing that I'm amazed in is, like, why did they exist? You think, like, if a corporation's job or business's job is to cut cost and maximize profit, are they going to really be giving these people the best chance at coming back into society and maybe, you know, doing their time and then becoming a productive member? Because I think part of the reason that recidivism is so high could be because private prisons cut corners and necessarily don't put money into programs. Because think about it, if you were a private prison, you would hypothetically want to create a culture of like fear and mistrust and violence within your prison, because then those people get to stay in there longer and you make, you know, $1 billion.
Yeah, I don't know why they were, like, I understand, yeah, like how you're saying that, I understand, like, if you're going to completely be a soulless, like, you're going to view this from, like, a financial point of view, and maybe the, like, it's no longer, whatever, like, you know, what did they say, Aaron? What was their reasoning for, divesting in it?
Oh, it was based off of risk assessment.
Like, this is not just anything, like, any kind of entity in the country, like, private prisons, I see them, in my opinion, are like modern day slavery. Like, I don't know why we have, like, why people are profiting off of prison, like, prisoners. It's just questionable, like, why the UC would even invest in private prisons in the first place if they're an institution for bettering the society and learning, and it seems like private prisons do the exact opposite of that.
I feel so, like, yeah. It puts the idiom crime doesn't pay into a weird sense of perspective. Crime apparently does pay. Lots of money. Millions of dollars.
If you're the right person.
Yep.
Yeah. It pays if you're at the top, if you're the prison warden for a private corporation, I believe. However, it's just, why bother investing in companies in the first place that for profit? I mean, this just shows how the UC makes its investments and why it makes its investments. It makes its investments not based off of what's going to help students, what's going to help researchers the most. It bases off of it what's going to make the most profit. And I think that's part of the problem. It just opened up, yeah, there's like obviously a huge sociopolitical problem with how even investing in these is kind of a slap in the face to people of color who are most affected by the private prison system. Mm-hmm. However, it also opens up a larger issue of the UC acting like a business instead of for the benefits of society in general. I mean, the UC was created, any university system in the world is created to educate its students and to further educate the world and bring progress, and these are doing it. This just shows that, no, we're doing this from a profit-based perspective. We want to invest in something that's low risk, that will give us high returns, and that's not how a nonprofit should run. That's not how it should go back. I mean, if you're going to have all this money, and $25 million is just a drop in the bucket for all the investments that the UCs have. If you read the article this week, they have over $100 million worth of investments in their portfolio. So $30 million is nothing. So what other...
They have $100 million?
$100 billion.
Oh, okay. So that's like, that's like a third then.
No, $100 billion, yeah. $100 okay, billion, so that's a drop in the bucket.
And it's like 1%.
It's not going to make that big of an impact. I understand, obviously, the people at the top, the chancellors and regents, have to get paid a little bit more, but it's insane. You have football coaches over at UCLA, UC Berkeley, making $2 million a year, and you have other people on the opposite side. Like, you have a lecturer for an electrical engineering course at UCR making 30. And that person has a PhD. That person makes sensors for different companies, and he's making $30,000 while these football coaches are making $2 million. And that just shows you how it's running, how just the entire university, it's an industry. It's an industry. There's no such thing as a public university in California. I'm sorry.
Well, that you can't really blame administration for that. I mean, they have to operate within the constraints put on them. If we were, you know, a little more of a forward-thinking society, they wouldn't have a need for this, but they do. But I would just hope that the school, if they are going to invest, which they have to do because they have to make their money grow, would try to maybe, at the risk of some profits, invest in more moral businesses or in local businesses within the community. That being said, though, I don't really know how the sports thing correlates, because the reason Berkeley and UCLA are so have so much money and they have so much, you know, capital and get so many students isn't because of their electrical engineering lecture. It's because they have football teams. Sports teams are great for colleges, and they always, almost always, generate more revenue than they take out. So, I mean, I wish we had a sports team, because I think that's the next step to moving UCR forward.
We have sports teams.
Not football. We used to have football.
We had good sports teams.
But, yeah, we don't. Yeah. I don't know. I thought it was interesting after talking to a few people, learning that they are still with companies who are profiting from the prison system. So maybe, like, just in general, it's hard to know, like, were they really listening to these students and, like, on the whole, like, humanitarian side of it, or were they just looking out for themselves? So I don't know.
I think that what was interesting was the quote that Aaron got from UCLA finance professor Ivo Welch. The last part of his quote was, "I'm almost left speechless by how we pamper student whims." And I think that kind of thinking is just insane to me, because something like private prisons and, like, divesting from it, it's not just the whim of the student. That these are obviously students who protested this.
It's offensive.
That's offensive. And, like, it's like these things affect people's lives. It's not even just, like, one person. It's like jails and prisons affect generational. Like, it's a generational thing. It's like it's not something that's just like, oh, I don't like, you know what. It's like, this is an institution that's in the country that has probably affected, you know, and it definitely not probably definitely has affected a lot of students, you know, people of color, but, you know, just anyone who comes into contact with a prison, they know how bad, you know, the kind of culture that's bred there, like the kind of thinking that's imposed upon the inmates there, the things that go on, the human rights. I would say, like, some of the human rights violations, like, they're not human exactly, but, like, some of the things that have happened in the past year regarding prisons and stuff like that, some of the things that go on there, you wouldn't believe it if I told you. Like, you know, there, like, in San Francisco, there was a gladiator type, like,
oh, I remember that
prison, like, yeah, the prison guards, like, staged this weird gladiator type fight club amongst the prisoners, like, against their will, like, and that's not something that received wide, you know, national coverage, but that's what goes on in our prisons. So this isn't just the whims of students. These are institutions that have a profound impact on, you know, the lives that they touch.
Yeah.
On the surface, I guess it looks like a good thing, but I don't know, just diving into it more and, like, thinking about motives and things like that.
I'm going to say thank you to everyone who brought light to this and got them to divest. Yeah. Whatever their reason was, we need that sort of student activism to bring light to the hypocrisies at the UC system.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's definitely made me question a few things. But talking about prisons and maybe people who should be in prison, armed men broke into the desolate headquarters of a federally owned wildlife refuge in Oregon. And they said they weren't going to leave until the government stops its quote-unquote tyranny. They were there protesting the 5-year sentencing of Dwight and Stephen Hammond. They're a father and son. They're ranchers, and they were convicted of arson. So they were there supporting them, and they broke into the building. And they are armed, and they've just been there. And when they're asked, you know, what do you want or what's it going to take for you to leave, they don't really have an answer or, like, any specifics. They just kind of keep saying the government can't do this and certain things like that. So I just wanted to get your thoughts.
It's a good thing I'm not in charge of the government, because this situation would have ended a long time ago. I personally think that while I do support the Second Amendment, don't use it as a shield for seditious acts. You're allowed to, like, you know, have a well-regulated militia, and I don't see how government tyranny has to do with two people that burned down 138 acres of federal land need to serve a minimum sentence for arson. So, honestly, I just think it's, why are we letting these people stay in there and spout their nonsense? What? You can't really broadcast to the National Forum when you're behind a set of steel bars.
It kind of just comes to show you that, I guess, if you're on a certain type of political spectrum, because he wasn't a person of color, this was a white guy that did this as well. However, it just shows you, I mean, if you're on the right side of the political spectrum, I guess, like, you can get away with anything if you have those constituents supporting you, because no one's going to go into that.
Yeah. I think that also, just going to go back a little bit, did the people who were sentenced, like, distance themselves from the people,
they turned themselves in willingly. The Bundy people, they're like kind of like Gloria Allred with celebrity cases. They just love putting themselves front and center when they feel the government is taking away their rights. But I guarantee if we didn't have Barack Obama as president and it was, say, Donald Trump, they would totally not be doing this, not be complaining about tyranny.
Oh,
it's a political game and they're like pawns in it.
Yeah. Also, the land that they're fighting for is not exactly their land. This is land that, you know, I mean, if you take any like history class, you will know that like the land that was here people settled on the land, but it wasn't theirs. They kind of took it illegal, or was it illegal? I mean, I guess at the time it was legal, but point being, this was Native American land. This was indigenous land before it was anyone else's land. But even they didn't see land as like that. They didn't see it as you own the land. Like, this is our land. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't that kind of idea, you know, in pre-colonial times. But point being, this shouldn't even be an argument. Like, if you can't go out and fight for land, that's not even really yours, you know?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. It's almost been 2 weeks since they've been there, and the fact that law enforcement really, they haven't said they have any plans about removing or trying to remove them or like anything. They're just kind of there, like, chilling. And I'm like, if this was any other situation with any other, like, I don't know. I just feel like they're there and nothing's really being done. And it's really surprising after seeing all the protests and things that have happened over the past, like, year, and like how these people have been treated in like different, like, Black Lives Matter protests and like all that kind of stuff. And like, I don't know. It's like really surprising to just see them just kind of there, and they're armed, and they're just, no one's really doing anything.
Yeah. I mean, just to make a quick little public service announcement, for any of you listening, if you have one of those friends that's one of those people that says, why aren't there any white student unions, or what's this white privilege thing? I don't have any special privileges. I want you to show them this story and compare it to literally any other story where a person of color may or may not have had a weapon or did something illegal, because those were probably handled in two different cases. Yep. These are people with, like, assault rifles, and like that are saying that they're willing to like fight and like commit a violence if anyone tries to take them out, where then you have like an African American man with a toy gun at Target that gets shot like 30 times.
Or Tim.
So this is at the very worst case, this can at least be a nice tool to shut down idiots that don't understand what white privilege is.
Yeah, I think it definitely, like, I don't know, a lot of these events, like white supremacy is kind of making an odd comeback, but not in the way that we know it as, like, you know, white hoods and lynching and stuff like that. But it's definitely a different kind of, obviously we live in different times, so the way that, you know, white supremacy is going to be presented to us is going to be in a not so easily identifiable as that's white supremacy, but it's obviously that's what it is.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see how this all unravels. Maybe something will actually happen.
Knowing how the world works, they're probably all going to get to leave and go back home to their families.
All right. Well, this has been the Highlander Newsroom on KUCR 88.3 FM. The Newsroom is a co-production of the Highlander Newspaper and KUCR. The opinions expressed on today's show belong solely to their owners and do not represent KUCR, the Highlander, or the Associated Students. Special thanks to Louis Vandenberg, Monica Taylor, Eddie Valencia, Elliot Fong, Tina Bold, and Alex Hill. Stay warm and go to class, even if it's not.
Don't get sick.
Keep on keeping on. We're like almost like 2/3 of the way through the school year, and keep those grades up. It's almost time for midterms to descend upon us.
Thanks for listening, guys. Shameless plug, my show time here at KUCR has moved from 12 to 1 on Thursdays to Wednesdays from 2 to 3. So, but you should still tune in at that time because my good friend Danny Lopez, he has a show on that time now. So, yeah.
Is that AM or PM?
Oh, PM.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, you guys.